Welcome, everyone, back to the Brocast. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the On3 Network. And I'm joined today by Tracy Pearson. Tracy, how are you?
I'm good, Dave. How are you?
I'm great. I'm grand.
That's wonderful.
I'm beautiful. It's so good. What a great day.
We're
what
like
great
2 weeks
in the universe.
2 weeks into our...
2 weeks. 2 weeks. Well, 12 yeah. days. You know, 12 days.
I think we're doing grand.
I think we're doing exceptionally well.
And I really like our bros. So
I love them. I love them so much. Up top, before we get going, before we get deep into this, if you're listening to this and you're like, what the hell? What are they talking about? New network? You may have been a subscriber to our little site on another network. You might want to come over to our On3 network. Well, if you want to, right now, you can get 5 months. Five. That's 5 months. Tracy, count it off for me. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
That would be 5.
That means this time in August, right? My right? That's add 5 to the number.
Yep. Yes.
This time in August is the next time you'd even have to think about paying. 5 months for $1. $1. And you can get access to all of our lovely writing, all of our lovely analysis, all of our lovely breaking news, and our message board, which is popping off already on our new network. You know what the real hallmark of our message board really being alive and well for me was, Tracy?
I would bet it's the game thread.
Nope. I'll tell you what it was. You want to know what it was?
Oh, I know what it was. I know.
We have an Adai Mara thread that is over 130 replies.
I saw you tweet that.
That's right, baby. We're back. But yeah, no, our game threads are popping off. People have come over. It's been a really heartwarming experience, I think, for both of us.
And guys, we want to say we really appreciate you coming over because, I mean, I know you all have busy lives and you don't get the concept of what's going on. You just think, oh, this is still Bruin Report Online. But it's like if some writers moved from Newsweek to Time, your subscription to Newsweek doesn't just transfer over. So we really appreciate everyone moving with us. It's been very heartwarming.
It's lovely. We have a lot to talk about today. This little basketball team, this little men's basketball team is making its way through the Big Ten tournament. They've got a big game tonight against Michigan State. Potentially a redemption game, given that was the huge kerfuffle last month was after that Michigan State game. We got to talk about that. We got to talk about Tracy solicited basketball recruiting questions on the Hoops Forum, and we have a lot of questions, so we're going to go through that to whatever extent we're capable. Might not be answering every single question, sorry in advance, but we're going to do our best. And then we wanted to touch on some of the football stuff from this week because UCLA went and made winter workouts a huge recruiting event, which is kind of cool. Kind of not a thing that we've typically seen in the past. So a lot of cool and interesting stuff. But let's start with this men's basketball team. Last night in the – it's not the first round. It's not the quarterfinals.
It's the third Thursday, round.
The third round of the Big Ten tournament. What a stupid format. UCLA took on Rutgers and won 72-59. My big takeaway was they were not as good as they were in the previous two games, but the thing that was, and arguably was a little bit better than it was against USC, and maybe not quite as good as it was against Nebraska, but the defense traveled for maybe the first time this year. They played really good defense on Tariq Francis and held him scoreless in the first half. They did a nice job collapsing the paint for the most part. Had a lot of active hands. And the end result was holding Rutgers to under 0.9 points per possession, which is pretty much an elite number no matter who you're going against. So I would walk away from that relatively encouraged about the state of the team. I don't know what it says about tonight's game against Michigan State.
Yes, I would say, I wouldn't say it's completely a false positive, but Rutgers, in these games when you're getting toward the end of the season and in postseason, it's about experience and youth. And Rutgers is, I think it was the third youngest team in college basketball, something like that. And that comes out in these moments, because when it comes down to it, the experienced guys know where to be on defense. They know how to help. They know how to rotate. And young guys, it all starts to break down. The defense traveled for this one because it was Rutgers. I got to tell you, Dave, I'm just not that positive about the matchup with Michigan State.
What about that matchup maybe gives you pause? Like, is it that we just saw it a month ago and they won by 23? Is that the part?
Yeah. You know, it's mostly that UCLA's defense was just crappy in that game, if you remember.
I think so. This is the part where I don't know, because I walking into that weekend, I was like, they're going to get smoked by Michigan. I thought Michigan State had a chance to be competitive, but I wonder if the order of the games kind of made the second one a little bit of a demoralized, like they were a demoralized team going into that. And then the Cronin stuff with Jamerson and various other happenings during that game, they looked completely flat from the beginning of that game, which I do think changed the tenor of the game. I'm not optimistic they're going to win tonight, but I don't think it's going to be a 23 point blowout. I don't think it's going to be anything on the order of that.
Yeah, I don't either. But you are going up against a team that is talented, not one of Tom Izzo's most talented teams, but pretty talented. And they do everything that counters Mick Cronin's teams, where they're physical, they're tough, and they're athletic, and they have guys who just play their ass off. So
and they rebound the shit out of it.
They rebound. So it's just wow. And then they've got, I mean, you know, Bruce Thornton, I've been saying, was my favorite Big Ten player, but I gotta maybe say Jeremy Fears is seriously competing for that.
You mean when he's not heel kicking somebody in the nuts?
When he's not kicking people. How many times? That's happened a couple of times this
year. It's happened at least twice that I've seen live.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's just his fiery personality, Dave.
It's the Draymond Green thing where, like, I just can't control my legs. Yeah. Am I in the elite 0.1% of body control in the entire world?
He's got
world?
Restless leg syndrome.
Yeah. I've just got a restless leg syndrome when I'm playing basketball, and specifically when I'm being guarded hard by somebody. I just have to, you know, my leg just loses control. And
it does look kind of unnatural when I watch the video.
It's entirely unnatural. It's not a natural movement. He's intentionally kicking them in the nuts.
Yeah. 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 I just think it's strange. You remember think that's a problem.
Paul, do you remember when Chris Paul used to hit people in the nuts all the time too?
He used to just punch them.
Yeah, he would punch them right in the nuts.
Yeah, yeah. That was cool. He still is. I mean, he made some I don't know what I know. He made an All American team this year. Maybe AP something's wrong. I don't know. But we have a matchup of two players who were playing the point guard position best right at the moment right now. So that is an immense amount of fun if you're a point guard fan, which I am, to watch this game. Donovan Dent, like you wrote in your review, wow, I mean, what a slack game. He had two turnovers, Dave.
I know. Should bench him.
Oh, wait, he had a triple-double. Sorry about that. All I'm looking at is those two turnovers. That's five turnovers with 64 assists.
Frankly, disgusting. It's like he doesn't even respect the game.
Never remember anything like this ever. I've never seen anything like this, though. Have you?
No.
Seriously, do you ever remember saying, Dave, his assist-to-turnover ratio is maybe like, what, 12-1?
It's absurd. It's absurd. It's absurd. And like, it was like 59-1.
Yeah.
It was nuts.
Yeah. See, he's slacking
off. No. And like, there was stuff in that game where like, he's not an insane athlete. Like he's a good, quick athlete, but he's not like a vertical guy. He's good. He's not Russell Westbrook out there. He had a sequence where he stopped dribble penetration, went across the floor to like intercept the ball like it was football.
This is like his Superman sequence.
But like it was full like just basketball IQ. Oh, I know where the ball is going before anyone on the floor knows where it's going. So I'm going to run over there and take this ball. He does it with ease, dribbles down the floor, blows a layup because that's part of his
he was just heightening the drama.
The one little bit of kryptonite is he blows some layups. He gets his own offensive rebound, kicks it out, eventually gets Trent Perry an open three. Trent Perry misses, gets another offensive rebound, turns that into a layup. It was the most insane sequence of plays because it was the entire time you're like, that's the guy on the floor who's first moving at 1.5x speed. Like he's just moving faster than everyone else on the floor. And he knows where the ball is going 100% of the time. Like he knows exactly where it is going on the floor the entire play. When he turns it on, I don't mean to keep saying this because I'm feeling PTSD from November, but like I need to keep saying this. This is what we saw in summer. Like this is what we saw during the summer practices and why we were like, oh God, you know, this is the rising because look, the flaws of this team were no secret. Like the fact that they had two guys who are fours who were going to be playing the three and the four, the fact that they didn't have a true center, like all these things were not secrets, but we were looking and saying, wow, that Donovan Dent guy is really, really good. And now he is. And it's really fun to watch.
Yeah. But getting back to the matchup.
Yeah.
I'm just not really optimistic. I mean, the way this team has gone, we think, you know, all the talk of turning a corner and all this, what we've seen is a pretty good couple of good games. And then they kind of revert to a bad version of themselves. I think they are better now than they were like a month ago. Absolutely. But I anticipate this not my expectations are a little bit low. If they don't get blown out and they lose by under 10 and play competitively, I would say that's a really good indication of NCAA tournament play. If their defense can limit Michigan State, I would say take that as an indication that they might be able to overachieve and they in the NCAA tournament, and they are getting legitimately better.
Yeah.
Let's go with that.
The hashtag narrative about this team would be far different if the Minnesota game just was wiped from memory. If you look at it differently, if you look at it and say they'd won that Minnesota game, they had the horrible Michigan road trip, came together, beat Illinois, beat USC, Minnesota, beat Nebraska by a lot, beat USC by a lot, and then beat Rutgers pretty well. And the last three, especially with defense, more than offense. The narrative would be different, but you still have, and this is what Tracy's pointing to, you still have that Minnesota game. That's a weird one because they just didn't play. Like they just didn't show up on the defensive end in that game. And that was only four games ago. So can you be guaranteed that team doesn't still exist inside of these guys? I don't know. And that's the trepidation going into this game tonight.
That's like a existent. Does that team exist inside of these guys?
Yeah.
I love that.
It sure does, baby.
And we just have to say, I mean, my one frustration really, not one, but my major is Eric Daly, because I actually really like the kid. I mean, what he did last season, obviously we know he has a work ethic. Just his play this season has been really frustrating to watch for me because I had expectations for him. I mean, we knew he wouldn't be able to, his body and athleticism wouldn't plug into defending the three, but his inconsistency this season, and then you think he's kind of putting it together recently, and then there are times where it looks like he's just shot hunting for himself, being a little selfish, not focused on defense. Really frustrating for me because I'm really rooting for the kid, and sometimes it's kind of disappointing.
Yeah, I would say the same thing, you know, because there's moments where it looks pretty good. There was this perfect sequence where he gets a good, strong defensive rebound after a pretty good defensive possession for Daly. And then he takes the ball, dribbles up floor, and shoots from like the free throw line within about 10 seconds. And it's just like, don't do that part. Like, if you just didn't do that part, you would be like a really, really, really valuable part of this team. But it's your shot making, or whatever you want to call it, has value at certain points of a game, but it's not Kobe Bryant. Like, you're not as efficient doing that. Like, it's not a high efficiency play on a team with Donovan Dent, Tyler Bilodeau, and so on and so forth. But if you need a shot and Bilodeau's out of the game and it's late game and you need somebody to make a bucket because they're playing hard defense or whatever, and he can make a tough contested shot, I don't mind Daly taking that. I mind it in the middle of a game where it's open floor play and Rutgers isn't really stopping Dent, isn't really stopping your main actions, and suddenly he's just taking a shot that he could get any time.
At like, 19 feet with 20 seconds left in the shot clock.
You just never need it. You never need it at that point in the shot clock. And it's just, I don't know if that's feel. I hate using the, you know, kind of pejorative words, but it's just like, this isn't team play. Like, it's not, this isn't team basketball. Flow the ball. Like, just,
even without anger, Mick Cronin turned to the end of his bench, pointed at Brandon Williams right after that shot and said, get in there,
buddy.
Yep.
And Brandon Williams played great last night. That was a great Brandon Williams game.
Yeah.
All right.
So we've neglected a little because we just have been so preoccupied with other stuff to really be on top of basketball recruiting, which is kind of our forte here at Bruin Report Online. So I put up a Q&A and you guys asked a lot of very fun, great questions. We're not going to be able to get to all of them because that would take like probably 2 hours. But let me go down.
Would you like me to read some of the questions?
Well, I'm going to selectively, you may, but let me touch on a few. Does the coaching staff, particularly Cronin, recognize a recent lack of success has come from missed evaluations? I think there's a self-awareness with the staff. I think they know that they've missed on some evaluations. That was one of the reasons why they brought in Max, mostly because the way this is all structured, you have to start scouting for the transfer portal. I wouldn't even say now. I'd say months ago and now. And the staff is a little preoccupied with that pesky thing called the current season. So a lot of other staffs had brought in a recruiting staff and evaluation staff, and UCLA hadn't. Might have been budget. It might have been Mick probably being a little stubborn that he wanted it all to go through him. But with Max Feldman, they believe they have someone who does, who's very capable at evaluations and finding the guys, setting them up, getting a list of potential like transfer portal recruits that would meet Mick's criteria. So yeah, I think that what came out of their recognition that they haven't done optimum. Is there a timeline on those potential 2026 high school recruits outside of Phylon? There's it's spring. So there is a timeline on all of them. I think, yeah, you mean in relation to the transfer portal opening. I don't think that they really have an eye on the transfer portal that would impact their decisions that much. There are other things going on with those other recruits that impact their timeline more personally that we can't get into. What would you say has been the biggest factor in the drop in high school recruiting? Cronin's reputation, staff deprioritization of high school for transfers, staff lacking recruiting chops, all of the above? Yeah, I'd probably say all of the above. I think, as we've said, Cronin's approach to coaching basketball isn't for everyone. It does put off some people. I mean, that's just common knowledge. The fact that over the last few recruiting cycles, they have really looked mostly to transfers and not to high school, I think that has affected their ability to get some high school players. And I'll be straight. This staff hasn't done a great job in recruiting, I think. I would say that the staff has to step up and really show some effectiveness in recruiting right now. I would say that's definitely something that's out there. Dave, did you go through and find some more out here that you might think would be good, or should I just keep going?
Sure. Numo Doc says, we have had plenty of justifiable hand-wringing about high school recruiting. Knowing what we know now, which recruits have been real misses?
Oh, wow.
For example, miss, not attributing proper value to Pete Burries, dodged a bullet, Stromer, Stojakovic, Kamenia. Also, still some argument about whether to better spend money on Dent versus Burry's.
Yeah, that's just the way you put this isn't entirely accurate. I mean, a miss, not attributing proper value. I think UCLA SAS probably valued Pete and Burry's. There are just a lot of other factors that went into it to their recruitment. I think just about every program was on the same level of NIL with those guys among the programs they were considering. Pete just had a lot of connections to the Arizona program and not so much with UCLA. Burry's, UCLA kept trying, but I think Burry's was a player that didn't, that Mick Cronin style didn't appeal to him. It's not the proper value. They just missed on recruiting those guys, I would say. Dodged a bullet. I mean, yeah, we know they planted hand-wringing. Yeah, I mean, they did dodge a bullet. I mean, it's hard to say that about Kamenya. He was just he's a freshman on a Duke, loaded Duke team. I don't necessarily advocate taking Kamenya. I mean, I'm banging this drum that if you take four or five transfers, three or four of them need to be athletic defenders, and that's not him. So
all three of those guys, I think, were going to be bad fits for Mick Cronin.
Yeah, that too.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's what you said is correct. I mean, I don't really look at it as misses and dodging a bullet. I just look at it as time spent versus whether you got anything out of it. And the Burry's thing, the way to think about that one is more, do you want the Braden Burry's that you're getting this year for Arizona, or do you want the Donovan Dent that UCLA got this year? And I think on balance, now that we're reaching the end of the season, I think you still probably lean towards Dent, right?
I think you kind of do, just for what you would need on this team. The Dent that you see now is the guy that this team needed. And I don't think Burry's, just knowing the situation and his and the whole thing with his aunt, I don't think it would have been a good fit. So even knowing now, I mean, we've got, let's say we have all this information of how Den is now and how Burry's is now, I would still go back and tell, you know, them that if I could time travel and say, take Den. So, yeah.
Yeah. Bruin Spud asks, what is Mick's relationship like with local high school coaches? Has a slowdown in high school recruiting had a negative effect?
I think generally, you got to understand Mick Cronin. Mick is a really personable guy. In person, there are very few people in this industry, from college coaches to administrators to high school coaches, who don't like Mick Cronin. I mean, he's very well liked. Now, is there the other shade of it? Do they want their kid to go play for Mick Cronin? Mick is old school. I mean, he is tough on his players to make them better. That is an old school philosophy, and there is a new school type of recruit out there in both high school and in transfer recruiting that aren't used to it, aren't accustomed to it. They've grown up a little bit more pampered and coddled, so they're... You can see how there are high school coaches that just would say, I like Mick Cronin, but I don't think my player will fit in his program.
We have one from Just a Bruin Fan.
Is that all they are? That's great.
That's so nice. Any thoughts on 2027 recruits? Who should we keep an eye on? And who are some guys UCLA has an early chance with? I'd even take educated guesses or projections.
Sure. Probably the guy they're really focusing on right now is Navorah Bowman Jr. He's at Sherman Oaks, Notre Dame, about 6'2", lead guard, really quick, kind of a play alike a bit to Donovan Dent. Maybe doesn't have that pure passing vision, but has that kind of burst and that kind of quickness, gets the rack, a better shooter. At the same stage, probably a better shooter right now. They're on him pretty hard. Jason Gardner is a combo guard that unofficially visited UCLA. His recruitment was pretty much motivated by him. I guess he grew up UCLA fan, loves UCLA. His father is part of the staff. I don't even know what his title is at Arizona. But the word is that, I mean, we hear this a lot in these situations, but I've heard from some people that he legitimately has an open recruitment and will very much potentially go someplace besides Arizona. Those are probably the two biggest. Anderson Diaz is a point guard from Georgia. They followed him around last summer. Hard to say at this point where that is. I know they're really focusing on Bowman. Gene Robach is a local scorer, La Mirada. His stock has gone down a little. He can really shoot it. Volume shooter. His body is just okay. Stayed about the same. Not a fantastic athlete. So I think that's it right now. The way UCLA staff, they are so intense during the season that the next upcoming recruiting class, they start at now, it's set back a little because of the transfer portal. So it's set back a little bit more, and they really turn the page on the season, the transfer portal, and then yes, they've been recruiting guys in the 2027 class, but then that's when they turn the page. Like a really big event is in June, and that's Section 7, which is hundreds of West Coast basketball teams with probably a few East Coast thrown in. That's in Arizona, and they can actually see a lot of these guys. And that's when the senior to B class really changes and evolves. So that's kind of the way it works.
Night Owl 805 has two questions. One, did Mara get $3 million from Michigan? No, not as far as we know. It was less than that. And then two, any chance we are looking at Diop from Arizona State in the transfer portal?
So I'm preparing a little story about some guys that I could see UCLA being interested in the transfer portal. I'll probably include Diop in that list, in that story for next week. I mean, out there, you know, among people in the industry, it's widely thought that he is going to put his name in the transfer portal. It's widely thought that he doesn't see himself going to the NBA yet. People believe he needs another year. I believe UCLA will try with him. But man, that's going to be, he's got to be probably one of the top four or five center, if he enters the transfer portal, center prospects in the portal. So, I mean, anything could happen. The NIL's going to be pretty pricey, I'd say. We'll see what happens with that.
Okay. And then there's another question about a Tyron Jones, the wing from UNLV, and whether he would be an option.
I don't even know him that well. I mean, I actually know what Tyron Jones is, but I don't know. I'd have to watch a little bit of him this season.
And then let's see, I don't want to get redundant here. UCLA 3 asks, is there anyone on the current roster who won't be retained by the staff? Yes, obviously, but we're not going to get into names at this point.
The way it works is they all have meetings after the season. They all sit down and Cronin either says, I really want you to come back,
or you're not going to play very much, so you should probably look into other options.
Right. And the guys that he wants to come back will say, and I mean, Mick isn't necessarily saying this, but it is communicated, and we would want you to return for this amount of NIL. And that could be really key, because there might be some guys that he wouldn't mind returning, but probably feels he could go into the transfer portal and find a replacement player for, let's say they demand a lot of NIL. He could go into the transfer portal and find someone who's cheaper. So yeah, that's a big process. We've seen it the last couple of years. So we can't really answer that question now. It's going to be late. The facts will be given to the player and his agent, and they'll probably make a decision. But I mean, it very well could be, yes, we wouldn't mind you coming back, and this is the NIL level. And then someone thinks, one of the players, I'm worth more than that, goes and tests their NIL market, and like with anything else, you know, when you're selling a house, all you need is one person to hit that number. Whether generally an NIL value for a recruit is at one level, all they need is one other program to hit a higher number and maybe they go. And the way this is the crazy part about this too. Teams like UCLA, other top 20 teams that should be top 20, need two or three big guys in the transfer portal, if not more, every year. There are other teams that might spend all of their NIL on one guy. So let's say someone's NIL value is $1 million. He might go to that other program and get 1.4 and say, okay, I'm out. So that's the way this market is. So it's not a set price throughout the entire market. There's a very reasonable possibility that one guy could go way above his set market price because there's one program that wants to pay the money.
Cuervo 78 says, can mix persona / coaching style be a hindrance in landing elite recruits / transfers? Or is it just about the money?
Yeah, I think we already talked about it. Absolutely. Like I said, it's not for everyone. There is definitely a different type of recruit that Mick Cronin's style doesn't appeal to as much as just 10 years ago. So yeah, I think we've always said that. I mean, it's not for everyone. So yes.
Somebody asking about Josiah Johnson. Is that completely done? And do we know where he might end up?
Well, here's a good indication. He hasn't committed to anyone. That is a NBA level talent. And he hasn't committed to anyone. So, I mean, don't want to say anything negative about the kid. I mean, just watching him on the court, he is fun to watch. I just watched, I couldn't help myself. And I wanted to see how he had improved since last summer and watched a little bit of his play this year. But I don't think there's a chance with UCLA at all. If they would have, he and his family would have to call up UCLA and said, we've completely done a 180 change of heart. We want to come to UCLA. We're not demanding so much NIL and we're not making other demands. So, and I don't see that happening, but no other program is giving in either. So that's going to be really interesting to see what happens by signing day in spring and April.
All right, I'll take this one since you need a glass of water. Augie West, when you say something to the effect of Cronin should have enough NIL to be competitive, what does that mean to feel the team capable of winning a Natty, making a Final Four? What level of success are you referring to when you say competitive NIL? This is a great question because it isn't a one-to-one thing. You spend a dollar, you get X number of wins. Washington is among the biggest NIL spenders this year. Shall we all together take a look at what Washington's record is this year? Let me just scroll down in KenPom. They're 53rd. They're 16-17. They have spent more than $1 million per win.
They got that one guy
who
is just bankrolling the whole thing with a lot of money.
Money itself is not the answer. It's evaluations. When we say that Cronin should have enough NIL to be competitive, what we mean is that they've hit the minimum standard needed to evaluate appropriately and be able to acquire guys who can help you win. I know that sounds like kind of circular, but there's like a minimum level that you need to be able to get enough guys that you have a chance. And that's probably about $10 million.
What would you say? There's probably like 7 to 8 programs that are in an elite tier of NIL that are above. And then probably
Washington is one of them. Guys.
Washington is one of them. And then the next 20. So it's probably even 10. I don't know, but the next 20 are probably all within $1 million or $2.
There's not a huge deviation.
Yeah.
And this is why like people were kind of getting on Mick for saying, oh, we're not even top 30 in NIL. Maybe technically true, but also the difference between number 10 and number 40 is like $1.5 million. Maybe there's not actually that much difference. And you can, if you evaluate well, you can outperform your level of NIL, but I guess our point is that they should be above the minimum level you need to be able to evaluate and produce a competitive roster. And yes, would that roster, if they evaluate well, be capable of winning a Natty? Yeah, there's nothing precluding that from happening at the level we're talking about.
And Cronin complaining about NIL, that's his way of saying, so people ask us, he's complaining. He's saying he doesn't have enough. And you guys say he has an adequate amount. That's his salesmanship of trying to get people.
Yeah, he wants more.
Right. It might not be the most effective way. I personally think he should be positive about it and say, come on aboard, be part of this. We're going to go win a national championship next year and we need you, something like that. Rather than saying, you guys are slack and I'm dealing with not a lot of NIL. I think there's a more effective way of doing it. But
yeah, agreed. But there you go. A lot of people asking about who the two 2026 guys are, and we're not going to tell you. All right.
And just to say really fast, I'm not doing this just to drive y'all crazy. Believe me, I want to tell you, but there are a lot of reasons. One, could it hurt UCLA's recruiting in some instances? Yes. And that's just not because someone had put up a post yesterday that it's because UCLA's staff won't compete at a high level and are afraid of competing. Every staff in the country wants to keep their recruiting secret because they don't want it to spur on more competition. And it's especially so now in the NIL era, because there are plenty of programs that will just go, seriously, I've heard about this many times. We'll go bid on a guy just to increase his NIL price to screw another program. I mean, that's happening. We have sources who say, hey, you can't say it. It'll burn. I'll get in trouble with people who I heard it from. So we can't do that. And then there's the individual recruit himself that we're protecting him because it's not a good time. We've gone through this. We've pulled you guys over the years. Do you want us to tell you these hints, or should we just wait until we can release a name? And I think Dave, pretty much overwhelmingly, they wanted the hints.
Yeah. T-Dog 325. If you had to choose one between a high-level impact post or a high-level athletic wing, hypothetically, there is only enough NIL to afford one high-level transfer. Which would you pick?
Well, I'll go with the post because...
You always will.
Well, mostly because this team is lacking. This team this year is lacking rebounding, rim protection, post defense. And you can it's just an example of not having that player. What sets this team back? I'm not trying to undersell the importance of a great wing. And he says athletic wing. So I'm assuming he means a very good defender. But I'll go with the post. It was funny because last night, Dave and I watching this game, I said, you know, if they just could plug in Kobe Johnson to this team, they'd be a lot better.
And that's what I'm going to counter with, Tracy, because who has been playing the center position for the last, I don't know, six games, and they've been playing a lot better basketball?
Yeah, yeah. That's because they're playing a different offense generally. You're right. Tyler Bilodeau played the five last year. For him to come back, you know, I understand his camp didn't want him to play the five. Should have switched right there to a five out and said, you're not. You're going to be hanging out in the perimeter and picking and popping and hitting threes. So, yeah, you're right.
When Cronin's team was at its best, when his program was at its best, he had very, very switchable, high-level 2-3-4, and they were all big guys, and they were all pretty good athletes. And I think that is the – the archetype of a good Mick Cronin team is you need switchability on the perimeter and you need a lot of guys who are athletes who are also physical. Like, cause I think athletic, you think of like a life Kobe Johnson, and I don't even know if that's perfect. What you want are like Jaime Jaquez level athletes who are good athletes, who are good power athletes, who can play up, play down, but they're going to go in there and really, you know, smack guys around and rebound too. And I think if I had to pick one looking at next year's team, I mean, they need a post, but if I'm choosing between high level athlete at the wing or high level impact post with the commensurate dollars associated, I'm going wing 100% of the time.
See, I think there's a way to do this. It's going to matter who's available. You could get an elite wing who can score and defend like an NBA potential NBA player. And then you get a serviceable post who can actually rebound and maybe block some shots, maybe not great on offense.
Yeah.
Or you get the elite post who's really a dominant player, and you get an athletic wing who can least defend.
Yeah, I would go first option if it's available. Here's a good and interesting question. I'm going to kind of synthesize it because it's long. But basically, SGV Brewin 94 is asking about How have the influence of AAU programs kind of changed, especially in this new era of transfers being prioritized? And he asked specifically about the Why Not AAU program. So much great talent coming through there, and it's Westbrook's program. Does the UCLA staff have a strong relationship with the people involved?
Yeah, it's interesting. When NIL hit, the feeling was that AAU basketball was going to dramatically change. And it has changed a bit, but it kind of really hasn't. What NIL did was create a lot of people acting as agents who aren't even necessarily agents for transfers and for AAU. And for years, traditionally, AAU guys, hangers-on, kind of operated as agents anyway. So that's still there. Very much. The NIL price for transfers has been set. The NIL price is fallen right in line for high schoolers. It's kind of the same thing. So it really hasn't changed. They still maintain those relationships. College coaches maintain those relationships with AAU programs. I don't think that's diminished that at all. The Why Not program, I'll be straight with you. All I've ever heard is UCLA does have a connection to it. They do follow around that AAU program every summer, and they start to seriously consider some of the guys on the team. But I think you're over estimating what, like, you know, Russell Westbrook's program. It's not Russell Westbrook is with them every day and saying, go to UCLA, go to UCLA. That's not how this is. I mean, that never happens, almost never. So it's not like playing on you got to understand, it's all about the kid. It's all about who his handlers are. And most of the time now he's got high schoolers have agents outside of their AAU programs. So we all have traditionally thought that there's such an advantage to having a connection in an AAU team, and it was always overinflated, and it is more so now.
Sons of Westwood 4 basically asks about the front office. How much do we think it affected Cronin's ability to identify and recruit prior to, and do we think anybody's going to be added in addition to Feldman?
I think I touched on it at the beginning. I do. I think that might have been the misstep previously, and I don't know if you can necessarily blame Mick. I don't think he had the budget. He hit up the administration for a while. I need a front office budget, and that got them to hire Max Feldman. He has been hitting it up for more, and to the administration's credit, they have decided that I think there is an active decision to build out that front office for basketball. So I do believe there will be some additions to Max Feldman to help evaluate. You just have to have it. And you know what? It's bigger than the coach. It's about the program. It's about building up the program so it can compete on a level no matter who the coach is, and it about being attractive to any other coaching candidates. It's about getting the program up to speed to compete on a high level.
And a big part of why Chesney was attracted to UCLA is that even while the Deshaun Foster error was going on, they did ramp up front office while that was all going on. And it was a factor in attracting a guy like Chesney. Just hint, hint. Wunderlich, he's asking just kind of with the changes in the way recruiting is, how much time does the staff actually spend on the road recruiting high school players compared to previously? Like, is it, like, what percentage of their time is spent doing that compared to, you know, 10 years ago? Is it 50%, 75%? What is it?
I don't know. I can't come up with the overall percentage, but they're on the road just as much as they ever were, because there's a limited amount. Well, there's two times. There is during the season, you can go out and watch some high school games, and then there are all the evaluation periods in spring and summer. You know, during the season, Cronin's staff would go out to watch games, but not necessarily really aggressively. It was kind of similar to Ben Howland. They are Mick Cronin and Ben Howland are very intense during the season. But during the evaluation periods in spring and summer, you have the certain amount of time you can go out, and the staff is out. Absolutely. I mean, that has not changed at all. It's also all these coaches go out just so they can, you know, just bullshit with other coaches at all these events.
All right. There's two more that are worth doing. Not that if you didn't get your question answered, just because it was a little bit redundant with something we already said. Two people asked about Dylan Betts. Why is the staff not prioritizing them, or are they? And what's the status there?
I haven't gotten any information on that in months, but what I heard before was that they are positioning themselves, that is the Dylan Betts people who represent him, as being like worth a lot of NIL money. Thinking of him as like one and done kind of status when it comes to NIL privilege, what they want from a program. Generally that has not flown well with Cronin and his staff. Whether they change now, I don't know. I will reassess what the Dylan Betts situation is this spring, but that's what it was before.
Got it. And then last one is fun question.
Okay.
Between Duke, Michigan, Arizona, and Houston, which possible number one seed do we have the best chance to upset? I think we can get Arizona. That's the one I agree with. I don't think they have much chance against the other three.
Just because it would be so fun.
They also played Arizona competitively when they weren't really playing well at the beginning of the year. So yeah. I think Michigan, that's not a good matchup. Duke is not a good matchup, and Houston rebounds the crap out of the ball.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think Arizona would be a good matchup. So Arizona's number one seed in the West.
You want that? You want to go through San Diego, baby?
Yeah.
There all right. Well, that was some good stuff. And if we didn't get to your question, if I somehow skipped it, please re-ask it. But I think we got most everything of unique value there. Okay. In addition to all of that, well, first, the women's basketball team, we didn't talk about this. They motored their way through the Big Ten tournament, absolutely crushed the life out of Iowa in the Big Ten championship game on Sunday. And as I made the case earlier this week, they should 100% be the number one overall seed. Yeah, you could say, oh, they don't need it. Oh, they want to have a chip on their shoulder, the whole thing. I don't care. Reward the best UCLA women's basketball team ever with the number one overall seed. Do I care that they got blown out by UConn last year? No, I don't. Sorry. Sorry that UConn plays in a bad league and they've only got 8 quad one opportunities all year. That's not my fault.
Hey, that's their choice. That's their choice. They should suffer from the choices they make.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And UCLA should be rewarded for the choices it makes. Anyway, they rock. It is weird, the format for women's basketball. It sucks that they do this every single year where there's a week off between the end of the conference tournament.
I hate this. This is so all the momentum of the women's season is gone right now.
I don't know why. I mean, there's probably a very good reason that I'm just not thinking of, but why not just offset the tournaments and start the women's tournament this weekend?
I think they don't want to take all the attention away from the conference men's tournaments.
I guess. It's lame. It's really lame. They should do that because I think a week off doesn't serve anyone well.
But overall, with the women's team, reward UCLA for playing in the toughest league in women's basketball and getting all those quad. And you have to do that.
Scheduling Texas in the non-con, like scheduling teams that like could actually give them a challenge. And not that UConn didn't do that, but UCLA did it people knew Texas was going to be really good this year and they still scheduled them. This is
a ridiculous schedule that they had. So they need to be rewarded. And I think aren't there enough metrics, Dave? Didn't you go through them all like on Mr. Bart?
Every one of those like resume metrics, not the so UConn is still thought of in the like efficiency metric systems as the best team in the country. It's a closer thing than it was a month or two ago, but it's still UConn. But in all of the resume metrics, like the wins above bubble, quads, all that kind of stuff, UCLA is far and away superior from a resume standpoint. So if they were consistent in their, you know, kind of methodology, which they aren't, and I'm being funny, they're never consistent. But if they were consistent, it would be obvious that UCLA is the number one overall.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Anyway, that was women's basketball. Just wanted to briefly say that because they absolutely annihilated Iowa. It's just that was Sunday and it's already Friday. And we'll have selection Sunday events for both teams on Sunday. We'll cover where they're going and what they're doing. But football, Tracy.
Yes, Dave.
Football this week kind of sneakily had huge visit days. Basically every day this week for all of their like kind of ending of winter workout events. And they did turn these into events. Like if you haven't been following UCLA's social media, the football team's social media, they turned like their max workout days, like doing like max squats, max cleans, all this kind of stuff. They turned those into like essentially club events where they've got like smoke machines and, you know, lights going on, and it made it really fun looking. And they did that while also hosting recruits for unofficial visits. And it was a lot of top level guys from this upcoming class and also some underclassmen as well. Just it's the energy around the program in recruiting is really impressive so far. We'll see what kind of fruit it bears. And again, there's a lot of this stuff that like, you know, what we're comparing it to is still like residual Chip Kellyism. Deshaun Foster did better, but we are still like kind of comparing against Chip Kelly and the guy who didn't do his job. But it is nice to know that they're kind of competing on this level again. Like they're getting high level guys on campus for what is kind of a unique event that I haven't seen them do before, where they're turning essentially their winter workouts, which winter workouts, if no one's aware, like it's the most grueling part of the, I mean, guys complain about spring, but also the winter workouts can be really, really grueling for some of these guys, and turning it into like a fun thing. That's a big event that like, you know, kind of a team bonding event that also works as a recruiting event, I think is something unique that UCLA hadn't done before.
It's almost foreign to us, Dave. I mean, not since Mora did he create recruiting opportunities in just the daily stuff that you need to do. But Chesney is taking it to a whole nother level. And in this day and age with the type of recruit and who they are these days with NIL, with all of it, I mean, this needs to be done. And it feels strange because it hasn't been done at UCLA for so long. I mean, it very well might be done at other programs. And we're just not used to it, and it's shocking. But like reading some of the stories, like Adam Gorney, by the way, our guys from On Three, Brandon Huffman, Greg Biggins, Adam Gorney, and then special shout out to Tracy McDonald. The amount of football recruiting information that we're getting is insane. Probably the best ever. And just want to shout out to them.
They're crushing it.
They are crushing it. Adam Gorney's story this week was the prospects rave about the Bruins weightlifting session.
Yeah, dude.
One guy said, oh, it's a bar. They set the bar. I don't know how anyone's going to match it. I mean, this is when you're trying to build a program, you need to compete for high level guys without doing anything on the field yet. And you need this kind of stuff just to be able to bring yourself possibly even to programs that have a established coach, that have a good, you know, win loss record, have done well in the last few years. And this staff is really doing this to eventize the max lift day is really fantastic. And obviously what all the recruits really valued.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Our team here has been doing awesome work. And I mean, it's going to be, you know, what fruit is born is probably going to be determined by the official visits, which will start they'll be mostly in May and June, but there could be some in April, I think, as early.
Start April 1st, but yeah.
Yeah.
I just want to say this, Pennington School four-star running back Tamir Brown took a swing out here on a visit, and he said, quote, the campus and athletic facilities were amazing, coaches were very welcoming and knowledgeable, The culture was top tier, and that weight room session was the best one I've seen so far.
Yep.
The coach's message was, be clear in what you want with a school. Pick whatever school for the right reasons that fits best for you. Damn. That's a four-star running back from New Jersey who had an impression. Now, whether he goes back home and he gets recruited, but that's the kind of impression that this program hasn't made on recruits and out-of-state recruits in a long time.
Yep. And that's a I always like a pitch like that because it's a very secure pitch. Oh, yeah, you should pick the place that's right for you. And then show them literally every way in which this is the right one for you. But I always like that as kind of just a, you know, because it comes across as honest. And people appreciate honesty.
Yeah.
Got anything else, Tracy?
No. I feel really good about this, Dave.
Yeah, we feel emptied. All right. For Tracy Pearson, I'm David Woods, Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the On3 Network. Again, $1 for 5 months. That's insane. That's crazy. I'm not a big math guy, but I believe that's 20 cents a month.
Let's go with that.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Crazy yeah.
times. Michigan State tonight. Enjoy the game, everyone. And we will talk to you again next time.
We'll see y'all.